and we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup, wearing my Wild Turkey golf course shirt a week late, but wild turkeys are the ones that survived last week, so post-Thanksgiving.
And I'm wearing pinstripes because I want to be appointed as ambassador to the Court of St. James's. They seem like they're giving it to Cindy McCain.
Sorry, too late.
All right. In the news, there are so far, at least from my count, three out LGBTQ Biden White House appointees this week, but no LGBTQ cabinet nominees yet that I know of.
Well, we will discuss that because we're a little, I speak with the royal we, I'm a little unhappy about that. Meanwhile, in Indiana, we've been telling you about a bad case there, but the attorney general, who is working to deny parental rights to same-sex spouses, is now leaving office in disgrace.
Yes. COVID-19 has hit the out gay governor of Colorado and his partner.
Very, very sad to hear this week about the death of really fundamentally important lesbian journalist Deb Price. We'll tell you some more details.
All about her. We're going to tell you about the coming out. I guess you could call it the second coming out of actor and activist Elliot Page as transgender.
We'll review a couple of movies currently running online, Uncle Frank and Happiest Season.
And the Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Corps made history at the Thanksgiving Day Parade. We'll show you some of that at the end. And let's get to the news.
Well, let's start with these appointees by the Biden administration. I must say I'm frustrated as these announcements are made that none of them are LGBTQ until a few that we've heard about in this last week.
And the two main ones are in the communications staff, two lesbian women of color. We have pictures of them. Corinne Jean-Pierre, who had been a senior advisor to Biden and chief of staff to Kamala Harris in the campaign. And also she'd been the chief of public affairs officer for MoveOn.org. And the other one is Peel Tobar, who
Peely,
had
Peely, I think. P-I-L-I?
Maybe. Had been, Ms. Tobar, had been communications director for the coalitions for the campaign and is the former deputy director of America's Voice for Immigrants. She was also a Hispanic media director for Chuck Schumer and communications director for the Latino Victory Project. So they will be visible. They're not the press secretaries. They're under secretaries, you could say, but you'll be seeing them. They will be filling in. They will be coming on programs to talk, and that's great. And you know, Ms. Jean-Pierre had been an MSNBC consultant. A lot of us have seen her. She's out there.
Very smart and terrific. And she's from Martinique originally, and Tobar is from Guatemala. They are immigrants in addition to being women of color and lesbians. They check all those boxes. But the fact that two out of seven communications officers for Biden and Harris are out lesbians, and who knows how many more in that list who haven't been identified.
And they're all women.
All women, seven women running the show. And that's nice. But, you know, women have been running communications in the White House ever since Dee Dee Myers in the Jimmy Carter administration. There's been a long list of them, including a long list of them for Trump. So the fact that there are women doing that is not such a headline. The fact that it's only women at this point for Biden and Harris is, of course, the headline. And the fact that two of them are out lesbians is definitely a revolution.
Who are we going to get in the cabinet? We've been waiting for somebody in the cabinet all these years. Although the
well, we've had a lot of closet cases in the cabinet. Janet Reno, Donna Shalala, who knows how many others.
That doesn't count.
Excuse me?
That doesn't count.
I couldn't agree more, especially since that often leads to, you know, negative consequences. But then, once again, fulfilling stereotypes, the new White House social secretary, an out gay man, Carlos Elizondo, who will be in charge of the parties, but a lot more than that. I don't want to sell this short.
He has worked as a special assistant to Obama and as social secretary to the Bidens when Joe was vice president. He also worked in the Clinton-Gore administration in the Office of U.S. Protocol. So not the first gay man to hold that post. Obama had Jeremy Bernard as social secretary, who was the first man and the first out gay person to hold that post.
And Carlos Elizondo is, of course, Latinx, and that is a breakthrough. But really, come on, let's have a cabinet position or two or three or four or five.
What do you want? Who are you rooting for?
Well, I assume that Pete Buttigieg is high on the list and will show up somewhere. But I'd like a wide range, a diverse range of people from the LGBTQ community in positions of real power.
Well, somebody I'm not happy about is this Neera Tanden, who is up for the office, who's nominated for the Office of Management and Budget. She's been a critic of Social Security and other safety net programs. But on the other hand, she's hated by Republicans, senators, but for other reasons, not because she's against.
Well, because she said nasty things about them. Heaven forbid. I've seen her on TV a lot. I am surprised by her conservative leanings because that is not the impression I've gotten from her. But maybe
she gave a nice speech when she was nominated. But really, it's just now they're saying Biden has to go to the mat for her. But we're really not. Are we really getting anybody from the real progressive side either?
I think a lot of these people he's nominated have progressive leanings, and it's very hard for me to imagine that the Biden administration is suddenly going to be going after Social Security. That's insane.
Well, we live in a brave new world in this pandemic. We just don't.
Well, of course, it will certainly depend a lot on the Georgia Senate elections. And, of course, a new idea has arisen this week. Not a completely original idea, but you forget these things until they pop up again. And that is to appoint some Republican senators to the Biden administration from states that have Democratic governors, so that they can be replaced in their Senate seats by Democrats, thereby tipping the balance of the Senate. And frankly, I'd be happy to give three or four of them jobs in the Biden administration to be able to tip the Senate. It seems highly unlikely, but they've identified one already, which is Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, because he's already announced he's not going to run for another term. His term is up in 2022, and he seems like, and there's a Governor Wolf of Pennsylvania is a Democrat, so it seems like it would make a lot of sense to try to pick off that seat.
His name, but I think it was under the Obama administration. It was a longtime senator from Republican senator from Pennsylvania who they got to flip. They got to switch. Remember? You know who I'm talking about.
Not what's his name? The one we had a confrontation with in a theater on Broadway.
Oh, yes, that's the one.
Yeah, him.
Okay. Come to us.
In the middle of the show, we'll yell out a name and you'll, I think it begins with A.
He was a prosecutor.
Yeah.
All right. And everybody in the audience knows, but, you know, tell us.
Yeah, they're yelling at us right now. We're just old. All right. I want to go through the Associated Press printed an extensive article going over the LGBTQ agenda for the Biden administration, what they think the administration will tackle as its LGBTQ priorities. And if you've been paying attention, you probably know most of these, but I thought they laid it out really nicely. And so I thought I'd just run down this list.
Yep.
First, they talked about things that he can do as executive orders, including overturning Trump's ban on trans people in the military, which, of course, has gone back and forth over the last few years, but was set to, you know, Obama was cool with it, but then Trump interfered. But Biden can overturn that immediately. And non-discrimination rules for contractors, federal government contractors, Trump wiped that out, thereby allowing federal government contractors to discriminate. But Biden can reinstate those rules. And, of course, he can appoint people to positions at all the agencies of government who are in charge of LGBTQ rights and make those a priority across the government in addition to the appointees themselves. He hasn't made any major LGBTQ appointments yet, aside from the press office, which are obviously policy decisions.
In terms of policy, he can reverse the religious carve-outs that allowed for anti-LGBT discrimination. He can reinstate the Obama guidance at the Education Department on trans people in schools. He can collect data on us again. He can make it a priority in foreign policy around the world. Although it was interesting during the Trump presidency, there were outposts that we had where we had ambassadors who'd been there for a long time, raise the rainbow flag from time to time.
And stood up for us.
They'll be damned.
Look, Georgette Mosbacher is still standing up for us in Poland, for God's sake. Thank you. You have a, you know, D. Mosbacher, your lesbian stepdaughter. I haven't heard from her lately, but Georgette's been a staunch supporter. He has promised to fight violence against trans women. He can allocate some money to prioritize that, although, frankly, I'm not sure what the answer is. He can also support bans on conversion therapy for minors. So there are a wide range of things he can do. And, of course, I do some horse trading for the Equality Act. Again, that's
the House will pass it again, and yeah, the Senate will pass it if the Democrats are in control. There's only one Republican sponsor of it, and that's Susan Collins. Well, she's pretty miffed at everybody, including the Human Rights Campaign, for not supporting her. But come on.
Yeah, come on is the answer. But there are all those things that they can do. Meanwhile, though, the Supreme Court having this latest decision from them on you can't tell religious organizations that they have to limit their attendance for COVID has both good and bad aspects for us as LGBTQ people.
To compare, as the justices did, who in the majority, to go into church, to go into a liquor store, you know, that's an essential service and churches not. No one was saying that. But churches and synagogues and mosques are gathering places, and they're going to run with this one and really make a terrible pandemic in the winter much worse if they want to run with it. Now, you know, some churches can keep people distance and probably do this. I don't know why you would want to go into a congregation like that, but it's possible.
But we've seen all along for the last 9 months that people do. The decision said that the government can't forbid those gatherings. The churches are certainly still free to set their own limits.
Sure.
But the standard of the government not setting rules for religion is scary, because that, of course, then bleeds over into all our questions about religious exemptions versus non-discrimination. On the other hand, there are those who say that this ruling helps us because it frees us from conservative governments that would like to come down harder on us.
Well, Well, then there's the New York Young Republicans who wanted to have a big, who are say they're planning on having a big gala in New York. They won't tell anyone where it is. They have advertised false places where it was going to be on their website, places that were closed, and they won't tell anybody where it's going to be. But I think that they are inviting the sheriff's office and the health department to crack down on them so that they can bring a lawsuit and say this is political speech, you know, a boozy party, and they're going to want to do that.
Well, don't forget also that one of their honorees is one of the famous tricksters who has been messing with our minds for years with his escapades, and this whole thing may just be a way to mess with us.
Well, they said Sarah Palin was going to come in for this, but under the COVID rules, if you come in from out of state, if you come in from out of the area, the tri-state area, you have to quarantine for 14 days. You can't just fly in and go to a party. And the same with Matt Gaetz, who they've replaced Sarah Palin with, because she was probably never coming in the first place.
Well, they may show up remotely just because they're advertising.
The whole thing may be just a prank, probably designed by James O'Keefe. All right.
That's what I'm saying. He's the honoree, so I suspect he may have a hand in this.
Speaking of Irish people, how about that Sean Patrick Maloney? He's the out gay congressman from upstate New York, where he wins in the House in a Trump district. He is now running for head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, tasked with holding the House in 2022, which is a tall order. But he won by double digits in his district. The other candidate is Tony Cardenas of California, Los Angeles, also in the run, a leader in the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. We had a picture of them there.
Well, the congresswoman who ran the operation for this election was almost run out of town on a rail because the Democrats lost seats in a year when they should have been gaining them. And now the Democratic edge in the House is so narrow that people are really freaking out and panicking. So stepping up to want this job takes a lot of chutzpah, and I think that defines Sean Patrick Maloney. So I think he thinks he's going to go in there and just, I can fix this. Fantastic, but it's a hard haul.
We're not going to go into all the reasons we didn't get along with Sean early in his career. But I've seen him, like, during impeachment. I thought he spoke well. And
I think he's come a long way. And what we disagreed with him about years ago was his unwillingness to support same-sex marriage in New York State when he was running for attorney general.
He supported it. But what he said was, if I am elected, I would have to defend New York State law in the court and defend the law against it. And we said, No, you wouldn't have to. The previous attorney general didn't defend the sodomy law and got it overturned. So come on, don't say things like that. But I think he was trying to sound, to appeal to upstate, like he was, I will enforce the law. But if the law is unconstitutional, you're not supposed to defend it.
And it was a race he had no chance of winning. So why not be more progressive in your outlook and more honest?
To run for an upstate congressional seat. We don't know. Maybe we'll have
whatever. He has come a long way. I agree with you. He was terrific during the impeachment hearings. And he's been very good lately. So if he can do this, more power to him.
What about the revelations about Melania this week? That she wanted to put rainbow colors on the White House during Pride Week, and she was overruled by Mark Meadows, the uber bigot. Oh, please. I mean, she's free to speak out if she wants to speak out for us, and she doesn't. Although apparently she gave some message to the log cabin Republicans during the campaign.
Whatever. We're beyond that.
Okay.
We're moving on. But let's move on to Indiana for a minute.
All right. Let me find it. Okay. So we told you about this case last week, actually, where the state is appealing to the Supreme Court to overturn a lower court decision that says in a pair of same-sex parents, they both have to be listed on the child's birth certificate. And this has been the Supreme Court has actually said this before in previous decisions. We have a new court now. But this attorney general who has made this appeal, his name is Curtis, where is his
Hill.
name? Yeah, Curtis Hill. I mean, he was defeated in the Republican primary because he's got such a horrible record on harassment of women. We have a picture of four women who have refiled their lawsuit against him, alleging battery and defamation. They include a state representative, Candelaria Reardon, there, and three staffers. But the Indiana Supreme Court determined that Hill violated professional conduct rules and committed acts of battery and suspended his law license for 30 days back in May over this. So he didn't get reelected, and this is his last act.
This is not the last story we will hear this week of a politician who turns out to not be as advertised. Hold on for international news. Meanwhile, in Colorado, we were sorry to hear that out Governor Jared Polis and his partner Marlon Reese have both tested positive with COVID. I hope that they'll be okay. I'm more and more concerned by these long-term effects that we're hearing about. You know, people get the virus, they recover, most of them, but now we're hearing about heart problems, brain problems, lung
teeth falling out.
Teeth falling out? Okay, I haven't heard that
one. Yeah.
Long-term effects. So if you are under the impression that it's not a big deal if you get COVID because 90% or 95% of people recover, please take a look at the stories about what happens to people long-term. The longer this goes on and the more we can see the long-term effects, you do not want this virus. Please.
Well, yeah. And these Republican, and I'll call them this, bigots, who were the ones who went after us over HIV and passed all kinds of laws about HIV transmission to criminalize it. I mean, where are they about the willing transmission of COVID? I mean, they celebrate it at all these Trump rallies and everything else. And all of a sudden, you don't need a law against that. All right. A new interesting Gallup survey of 16,000 LGBTQ adults found that 47% of us are either moderately or highly religious. Now, that's opposed to 67% of the general population. And those of us who are most likely to be religious are older, Black, or lived in the South. Now, fewer and fewer people in young adulthood are choosing religion, but that's true of non-LGBT people as well. And the reason they cite is the way religion both gay and non-gay, is the way they treat gay people and transgender people.
Yeah, and that's been a trend for quite a while, I think. All right, I want to move on to talk about Deb Price. Deb Price was a journalist. She has just died at the age of 62. She had a long-term lung disease. She was working in Hong Kong. She'd been there for quite a while. But Deb Price became prominent years ago when she was writing for the Detroit News, a syndicated column. She went to her editor and asked to write a column on LGBTQ issues. As an out lesbian.
In 1992.
Yes. And this was revolutionary. It was the first time anything like this had happened in mainstream news. And Deb was a very thoughtful and I want to say gentle. That may be a little soft, but she was not an aggressive writer. She was a very moderate writer, but very forthright. And she wrote about her wife, eventual wife, then originally partner, Joyce Murdoch, also a journalist. We had them on the show years ago when they wrote a book about the Supreme Court and its handling of LGBTQ issues. They had originally, or Deb had written a book about her column called And Say Hi to Joyce, which was a quote from a reader letter. It is hard to overestimate the impact that Deb Price had with her column in the 90s.
Because it was a syndicated column. It went
yes.
into a lot of newspapers. And
all over the country.
You're right. She may not have been that aggressive, but she did break some stories. She did one on Republican presidential nominee Bob Dole, returning a contribution to the Log Cabin Republican Club. And in 2001, Gerald Ford, coming out for full federal benefits for gay couples. She broke that story. And as you said, she worked for the Wall Street Journal in Southeast Asia. She was also the White House and congressional correspondent for the Detroit News for some time. So a very deep journalist, a wonderful person, and
really, really nice person. She loved living and working in Hong Kong, but she had worked for the Washington Post. She was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard and taught journalism at Harvard. And when she died, she was writing for the South China Morning Post there in Hong Kong. Joyce was with her at her death. It's a huge loss. I think Deb's impact on the U.S. public reading that column in the 90s was enormous. It was the most mainstream thing happening at the time. And we owe a huge debt of gratitude to Deb for her work.
Absolutely.
And it was shocking to read about her death at 62. Really sad. So thank you, Deb. Thank you, Joyce. And let's remember Deb. I also want to remember Joanne Trapani, who was a New York native. She was involved with the Gay Activists Alliance here in New York around in the aftermath of Stonewall, involved, I think, in some of the work on legislation.
She was the first woman president of Gay Activists Alliance the year that I joined in 1975, when it was, you know, it was not as what it was in the beginning, but it was still going fairly strong.
So you knew Joanne. And then she went to Chicago, and she was enormously active there in every political club and event, and she ended up being elected to the Chicago LGBTQ Hall of Fame. She was the mayor, village president elected, but that's the mayoral position, of Oak Park, Illinois, the first out lesbian mayor of any town in Illinois. We now, of course, have the out lesbian mayor of Chicago. But Joanne beat her to the punch years ago. So Joanne Trapani, also a fundamentally important politico and activist.
And of course, you know that we lost Amy Stevens, who brought that transgender rights case to the Supreme Court and won rights for all transgender people in employment. But she passed away at the age of 59 before the case was settled. Well, this week, the funeral home that fired her has agreed to pay her estate and her lawyers a total of $250,000 to settle that lawsuit. So she had, you know, the court had ruled she has been discriminated against based on her on the issue of sex, and that was an absolutely landmark decision that she wasn't around to enjoy.
But as long as we're in the Midwest, I'll also mention that the Adler Planetarium in Chicago has an exhibit about Frank Kameny, our basic gay activist, who
I invented gay liberation.
Maybe Plato, but
he said that on the steps of the Supreme Court in an interview to this station.
But he was an astronomer working for the federal government when he was fired, and then took it to the Supreme Court and invented gay liberation. So the Adler Planetarium now has an exhibit built around him called Here and Queer and Exploring Beyond the Atmosphere. So if you go to the Adler Planetarium website, you can see the Frank Kameny exhibition.
And we'll try to include that link in our email. And if you want to receive our emails, where we do have links to a lot of other things that we talk about on the show, go to gayusatv.org. And you just, there's a place you can click on there. You can also send us a donation if you like. But I bet you've been overwhelmed by Giving Tuesday. Oh, my God. Feels so bad.
Giving Tuesday, it reminds me of certain organizations that I want to support.
Yes.
All right.
By the way, it's the 10th anniversary of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell this month. And modernmilitary.org/DAT DADT, is going to have an online celebration at noon on December 22nd. We'll include this link in the show note. And it's going to have a bunch of political leaders and LGBTQ veterans. And a study by the Palm Center says that military readiness has been harmed by the trans ban instituted by President Trump. And of course, that will be reversed by President Biden.
Well, that's a good segue into trans news, where the big headline this week is the coming out of Elliot Page,
right,
who you knew formerly as the Oscar-nominated star of Juno. Elliot is now self-described as trans, non-binary, pronouns he or they. And it, as a trans, non-binary person, is going to continue their role in Umbrella Academy, the superhero series on Netflix.
Yes, and playing the cisgender woman, Vanya Hargreaves.
Yeah. But Elliot, you know, was also in Freeheld and the X-Men series and Inception, and is a major Hollywood figure.
Came out as gay back in 2014.
Yeah.
And Page's wife, dancer Emma Portner, is very happy. And Elliot is profoundly happy. And knowing how much privilege I carry, I am also scared of the invasiveness and cruel and resulting in horrific consequences, which can happen so much to people of transgender experience.
Speaking of which, and moving.
I love being trans.
Yes.
I love that I'm queer. This is all quotes from the.
Yes, no, excellent. But speaking of scary, Laverne Cox, as we move through the Hollywood spectrum, put out a 11-minute video on Instagram this week about being accosted in Griffith Park in L.A. Threateningly, walking with a friend.
The friend was struck. And it was pretty horrendous. It was, some person who sort of came up to them and like, you know, you were he or she and this kind of stuff, and then struck.
But Laverne's video made right after getting home from this is very vulnerable and moving, because she is just in the immediate aftermath of the attack. So I watched the whole thing. It bears watching.
Well, send me a link and I'll include it in our email.
It's Laverne Cox on Instagram. I think I've probably deleted it by now.
Okay.
But to continue on to the saddest part of the spectrum of all, of course, is Richmond, Virginia. Black trans woman, Chamisha Sims.
Sims, yeah, shot to death on November 23rd in her 30s, the 39th such violent death of a trans woman, trans or non-binary person. This
and it's strange. She was in her car, but the car then crashed into the garage at her home. So this happened while the car was moving. I don't know. They don't have a suspect. They don't know the details yet. But it's another horrible story of a murder of a black trans woman this year.
Then I think people need some better news. Did you see this, that the Journal of Nervous and Mental Disease has retracted a 70-year-old article on homosexuality for long discredited beliefs, prejudices, and practices. This was by a guy named Dr. Benjamin Glover. Here's what he wrote in the journal. These people represent a parody and a paradox in emotions. In a sense, they burlesque love as heterosexual knows it, and yet they are a continued tragedy of failure to find either sex gratification or a person with whom they may enjoy continuously that measure of sex gratification they attain. It goes on and on like this. And this is what was science 70 years ago.
You know, 70 years. Only Galileo took longer to get an apology.
The title in May 1951, Observations of Homosexuality Among University Students. So that's a win. But no, they are going back. they're going back against racial stereotypes in these old journals as well. And of course, sexist stereotypes. And they're saying, get this out of here.
I love the reevaluations. I love the name changes. I love the statues coming down. It's it gives you hope that we may live in a better world 10,000 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they call it cancel culture. I have to listen to right wing. I have a right wing relative. Oh, cancel culture. Screw you. Were you against taking the statue of George III down during the revolution? That was part of our history. Yeah. Came right down. All right.
Don't worry. You can have a little park somewhere with all your favorite statues and racist sayings and everything else. All right. Should we move on to international news?
Let's do.
Well, the best story comes out of Brussels, Belgium, where a Hungarian diplomat who was member of the European Parliament, Joseph Szájer.
That sounds pretty good.
Close enough. A right-wing Hungarian politician, very close to Hungarian President Viktor Orban.
Helped write the Hungarian constitution to protect the institution of marriage as the union of a man and a woman.
Very, very anti-gay. Well, guess what? He was caught jumping out a window of a naked gay party in Brussels.
25-man orgy. Sex orgy. All I'm having here is the food orgy, but he had a sex orgy.
The cops grabbed him, but guess what? He was naked. He didn't have any ID on him.
Well, he had a bag with narcotics, but they let him off anyway.
He said, yes, I have this bag with narcotics, but I didn't take any of these drugs. What, you're just carrying them for your friends?
Can we just treat this matter as personal, please?
they took him home where he said, I am a member of the European Parliament. And they said, oh, okay. So he has diplomatic immunity, so he couldn't be prosecuted. But guess what? He's resigned.
And P.S., it's not just, look, hey, enjoy the orgy, but please leave us alone. But what they were really going after this party for was breaking COVID guidelines.
Exactly.
Like the young Republicans in New York.
So he's an anti-gay politician who goes to gay orgies that are overpopulated in the age of COVID. And
took a look at him. Put that picture back up. Make a look at him. I mean, yeah, he goes to gay orgies. He looks like every guy in Chelsea these days.
So that, of course, is the story of the week that amuses us. And we experience schadenfreude after he goes after us in his political life.
Well, staying in Eastern Europe for a second, the Poles don't quite know what to do with Chopin. He's the national son of Poland. Warsaw Airport is named for him. But evidence is emerging, and it's not the first time, of his romantic relationships with men. But his most famous relationship was with George Sand, who was a woman.
Reputedly.
Oh, reputedly a woman.
No, reputedly a relationship. So this Swiss radio documentary.
She might have been a beard.
Exactly. And if you're going to pick a beard, pick a woman with a man's name. Sorry, it's just getting too complex. So a Swiss radio documentary. Came across these letters that Chopin wrote that were all romantic and sexual letters to men, and made a documentary about it. So Poland is a little confused now because, of course, they hate gay people and they're all up in arms about it. The government.
I had a boyfriend back in the 70s, so it's a long time ago. But when his father found out that chances are, what's the singer?
Johnny Mathis.
Johnny Mathis. When he found out that Johnny Mathis was gay, the father went into the garage and smashed all his own Johnny Mathis records.
I love Johnny Mathis. I used to listen.
Johnny Mathis too. So what are the Poles going to do? They're going through what you would call it cognitive dissonance.
I don't know, but I was delighted to see that Harvey Milk Terminal was not the first airport named after a gay man.
Let's think about
Chopin has a whole airport.
All right. In Taiwan, the town of Kaohsiung, they had their 11th Pride. Now, this is during COVID, but Taiwan has this under control. So they were able to have 60,000 people at it, have it safely. Their theme was, "We around you." The city government raised the rainbow flag.
But in the UK, not so nice story, a former trans man who has reverted to a female identity sued the National Health Service for prescribing puberty blockers for him at his request when he was a teenager. So the court, in the form of a three-judge panel, agreed with her now, and says that teenagers cannot give informed consent, and that anyone under the age of 16, and maybe under the age of 18, needs court approval before being prescribed puberty blockers. This is not good news for the trans population.
But there is good news that my memory has kicked in. I did not have to look at my advice. The senator from Pennsylvania was, and Ann gave me a clue, with A, Arlen Specter.
Thank you.
Okay. That's the one who they got to flip. And then, of course, he lost when he ran as a Democrat because he was, you know, you've been a Republican all your life. You're not really, we don't really want you as a Democrat. So these things happen. All right.
They do. But the thing with Pat Toomey is he's not going to run again. So he doesn't have to worry about that. So you got to find people like that to pick off who are not looking for a future political career and who are honored to be picked for an administration job.
Well, I mean, Pat Toomey wouldn't have been reelected if Mike Bloomberg hadn't plowed all this money into that race because Toomey apparently was supporting gun control, and that was Bloomberg's issue. But of course, it left the Senate in Republican hands, which means you can't get anything done, which is
and certainly not on gun control.
No. Well, gun control is, you know, very, very tough. And of course, in this court, forget about it.
Yeah.
All right. AIDS news?
Yeah. So, World AIDS Day this week, December 1st. The White House, man, this was hard to look at in the Trump administration, had that huge red ribbon on the front of it. It's very hard to put up with the hypocrisy of the Trump administration claiming to care about any of these things. But there it was on the front of the White House.
Well, they cut your Medicaid and Medicare.
Yeah. Good news in some statistics from New York City, where the report is that last year, 2019, there were 1,772 new HIV diagnoses, down 8% from 2018. It's been a steady decline as more people are on treatment, more people are taking PrEP, the word gets out. The virus is just slowly, slowly contracting, but 70% of the new infections are still among gay and bisexual men, and 80% of those are Black and Latinx. So this is still a major problem for the communities, gay communities of color men.
Well, that was Dimitri Daskalakis's portfolio, and now he's at the CDC in charge of HIV prevention. So let's get moving on a national program. There is also a new test for HIV diagnosis. It's really an old test, the Aptima HIV-1 QuantDX assay. It was already approved for viral monitoring, so it is the first product approved for both uses, for HIV diagnosis and for viral load, and they do it at the same time. And that means they can get you immediately into treatment after diagnosis with this one test.
There were, of course, a lot of events around World AIDS Day, a lot of online events, a lot of observances. Day Without Art continues, sponsored by Visual AIDS. The New York City AIDS Memorial has a whole new thing where they have audio installations going at the memorial. But So in the age of COVID, people are making comparisons, but there's a lot of finally understanding that AIDS treatment and prevention is suffering in the age of COVID as resources are directed to COVID around the world. So the news is not great about AIDS. We've reported on this new vaccine that has had some good results, and I'm hopeful that that will show up sooner rather than later. But there is still a large AIDS community out there, particularly older men who have been living with it for decades, and then younger populations that are still just getting infected. Particularly, I mentioned Black and Latinx. Half of the new infections in New York City are in areas of high poverty. This is the message, and the resources are not getting where they're needed in those communities.
And poverty has gotten worse under the COVID epidemic immensely.
And of the women becoming infected, 91% Black and Latinx. That is where the virus is, and we are ignoring it. We're a backward nation.
I mean, Canada just passed this massive relief program for all of its citizens, and we're doing nothing for us, for people.
One of the, we talk about the David France ACT UP documentary that was so popular and Oscar nominated. But almost simultaneously, there was another documentary called United in Anger, made by Jim Hubbard and Sarah Schulman, and an excellent alternate view that presented different communities dealing with the AIDS. And that's now available to be watched online at the website unitedinanger.com. We can put a link to that in our show note, but you can see that whole documentary.
Very powerful.
Very powerful. The ACT UP Oral History Project is still a fascinating read. A couple of hundred interviews with activists over the years from ACT UP.
And if you're trying to fight in any cause, it is good to watch these films. And you will learn about how to do activism. I mean, Ann Northrup taught us a lot in those days.
Well, and when you read people's interviews who are involved activists, you find that they're just regular human beings who got involved for a variety of reasons and were able to find power in community. And that's a great lesson. So I urge people to check out the ACT UP Oral History Project website.
Well, speaking of heroes, Ruth Coker Burks down there in Arkansas, who did so much for PWAs as a single mom in the 1980s and became a national figure in the fight for AIDS education, has a new memoir out at the age of 61, All the Young Men, many of whom she buried in her family plot. Her family owned 262 plots at a cemetery. I don't know why. She inherited them, and she buried all these people with AIDS there. She's now working to build an AIDS memorial there in Arkansas. You can go to ruthcokerburks.com for more information. Entertainment news?
Yes, and as a segue, not necessarily specifically AIDS-related, but tangential. In New York City, there is all this month something called Black Magic in Times Square every night for 3 minutes before midnight. 70 billboards filled with slow-motion voguing dancers. This is something co-produced by the Leslie Lohman Museum of Art, the LGBTQ Museum, and Times Square Art. Beautiful work by artist Rashad Newsom. And on December 10th at 11:30 p.m., they're going to be dancers live on the Red Steps in Times Square. You might want to check that out.
After you watch Tina Fey hosting One Night Only, the Best of Broadway, with all these performers from all these Broadway shows and talking about Broadway Cares, Equity Fights, AIDS during the show. And that'll include Nathan Lane and Vanessa Williams, Billy Porter, and Sean Hayes.
The Grammy nominations came out. There are a lot of lesbians and bisexual women nominated. I'm going to read a list. Because I'm old, I only recognize a few of these names. Catronata, Chica, Phoebe Bridgers, I know that name, Brittany Howard, Brandi Clark, Brandi Carlile, of course, big star, Big Thief, and Rachel Maddow has been nominated for an audiobook she did. So the Grammys will be on CBS at the end of January, January 31st.
Okay. All right. I also read about the marriage of Paula Pell to Janine Brito. They're both comedians. It was the same profession marriage. They are, Pell said, it was a sparkling day of hastily purchased clothes from Target and joy tears, otherwise known as tears of joy.
Okay, congratulations to them. This Friday, 9 p.m. on PBS American Masters, Keith Haring, Street Art Boy, profile of Keith Haring. Set your DVR. I'm sure it'll be repeated if you're seeing this after Friday, but it's in the American Masters series on PBS. Check that out.
How are we doing on time? We have time for these for rolling this.
Yeah. Prom. Oh, the prom. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. So the prom, based on the stage show, is going to be premiering on Netflix on December 11th.
Let's show the trailer.
Let's show the trailer.
Hello, interweb. My name is Emma Nolan, and I'm 17. You might have heard about the prom in Indiana.
I just want to go to prom like any other kid.
All opposed.
I know we all have stories to tell, and here's mine.
Oh my gosh, check this out.
It's all over Twitter.
She wanted to take her girlfriend to the high school prom. And the PTA went eight-ish and they canceled it.
We have got to go down there.
Yes.
Raise holy hell.
We will be the biggest thing to happen in Indiana since whatever's happened in Indiana.
We have come to this community on behalf of a young girl.
I just wanna dance with you.
I'm sorry. Who are you people?
We are from Broadway.
I just wanna dance with you.
We're not monsters. We're cultural disruptors.
Your beliefs are not our beliefs. You don't know this town.
I thought that when my parents rejected me, that I would never feel any worse. I've never felt so alone in my life.
But you're not alone. And you do have friends.
Where are they?
Okay, people, this is the part where we roll up our sleeves and we put on a prom with our own bare hands.
I just don't understand it.
Well, I think it's brave.
Let's get this party started!
It's time to build a prom for everyone. Show them all. It can be done if music plays and no one cares who your unruly heart loves. Build it now.
I'm gonna take a stand
for all the people out there. Love someone in a way the world just doesn't understand.
Okay, admit that got to me.
It's time to
So I love the Broadway show. I'm nervous about this. I will watch on December 11th. One reviewer in Vanity Fair already said that James Corden, who is not gay and took the main gay role that Brooks Ashmunkus had on Broadway brilliantly. So we'll see. We'll give it a chance, but we'll see.
Wait, you didn't say what the Vanity Fair writer said about James Corden.
That he ruined it.
ruined it. Yes. Trying to be stereotypically
seeing his way through it, you know. Yeah. I mean, all right, whatever. And well, speaking of which, in terms of people taking gay roles, I watched Uncle Frank on Amazon, and you know, it's another drama about being afraid of coming out to family back home in the South. You know, an NYU professor in the early 70s. This was set pre Stonewall, but played by Paul Bettany. And I was going to sort of, you know, I mean, I think he did a decent job, but he's non-gay. But this week we read that he had a gay father who went back in the closet, who came out at 63, had a 20-year relationship, right, with a man. And then when the partner died, the father said, it was a misunderstanding. I'm really not gay. I want to go to heaven. Seriously.
Yeah, I watched the movie. I wasn't impressed by it until the very end. I thought it got a little more appealing. I think you said early 70s, pre-Stonewall. I don't think you meant to say
It started out in 69, okay. And then they jumped to 73.
And in the reverse, we saw the Happiest Season, which is the Kristen Stewart lesbian couple Christmas movie, which I thought was great for about 75% of it. And then it just fell apart at the end because she ended up with the wrong woman.
Right.
Which was not fun. It's on Hulu. It may be worth a look. It's a little interesting in that it takes the sort of classic Christmas trope and inserts a lesbian storyline into it. And a lot of people like that. There were a lot of positive comments about it. And
Dan Levy gets to play the gay best friend. I thought he was kind of the best thing in it. Victor Garber, who is out gay, gets to play the straight dad. And Mary Steenburgen was the uptight mom.
Yes. But for real life gay stuff, you had to go to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Because here was the little conceit. Because a lot of parades were canceled this year, they said they were picking up symbolic acts from several of them. So they took from the Pride Parade, which was canceled this year, the lesbian and gay Big Apple Corps band, and put them in the Thanksgiving Day Parade, which really was a pre-recorded act outside Macy's. They did a pretty good job. So here they are in the parade.